Welcome to Youth Speaks Out, a show by, for, and about young people. It airs on the last Sunday of each month from 2 to 3 p.m. and is hosted by young people in Mendocino County. We want to create a place where young people can talk truthfully about important issues in our lives and have a dialogue with the community of listeners. Today's hosts are me, Brianna, and
Janelle.
I attend Laytonville High School, and Janelle graduated last year and is attending Humboldt State University. Today, our topic is free speech, not enough or too much. Last August, the topic of this show was free speech and youth. The host discussed several instances of youth being suspended from school for freely expressing themselves. One instance was a seventh grade girl in Napa who wore Tigger socks in violation of a uniform dress code. The other was a student in Alaska who held up a sign reading, "Bong Hits for Jesus," at a public rally. The host talked with listeners about the dress codes and limits on free speech in our local schools. Today we want to go a bit wider and discuss free speech among the general population. Is it sometimes necessary to curtail free speech in order to protect citizens from other derogatory comments about their race, political views, or sexual orientation? Are the so-called homegrown terror acts proposed in Congress an attack on internet freedom and other civil liberties? Freedom of speech is the concept of being able to speak freely without censorship. In the United States, this freedom is protected by the First Amendment, which states, "Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof, or abridging the freedom of speech or of the press, or the right of the people peacefully to assemble and to petition the government for a redress of grievances." For the most part, we know this freedom is true in America. We are free to say what we wish, too. However, since radio broadcasts are controlled by the Federal Communications Commission, there are at least seven words that are common language that could potentially cause problems for this radio station. All of these words have sexual or scatological connotations. Slander and libel speech are also subject to civil litigation. Hate speech is a term for speech which intimidates, degrades, or incites violence against a person or group of people based on race, gender, nationality, or sexual orientation. Most European and Western countries have laws against hate speech, and violators are subject to imprisonment. In the United States, in order to protect our free speech, we must be tolerant of hate speech aimed at undocumented immigrants, African Americans, lesbians, and gays, Muslims, Jews, the young, the elderly, etc., etc. It has been said that one person's hate speech is another's deeply held truth. This is why we call this program Free Speech, Not Enough or Too Much. There is a bill that has passed Congress and is awaiting a vote in the Senate called the Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act. The bill would create a national commission who would be in charge with the task of making legislative recommendations on how to prevent, disrupt, and mitigate violent radicalization and homegrown terrorism. Many activists, scholars, and civil liberties experts are worried that in order to prevent an act of homegrown terrorism, people who have radical or extreme belief systems would have to be monitored before a criminal act might occur. This, they surmise, would amount to unlawful surveillance of individuals who are critical to the Bush administration and those who hold power in the current economic and political system. The vote in Congress was 404-6 in favor of the bill. Dennis Kucinich, one of the six who opposed it, stated, "If you understand what the bill does, it really sets the stage for further criminalization of protests. This is the way our democracy, little by little by little, is being stripped away from us. This bill, I believe, is a clear violation of the First Amendment." So which is it? Free speech, not enough or too much? We hope that you are interested in these subjects and will want to participate. We're at the Willett Studio, and our phone number will be 456-9991. We will encourage everyone to join in the discussion in about 20 minutes. Let's begin by talking about free speech. Should it be unlimited? Should offensive speech be overlooked in order to maintain our Constitution? Janelle, how would you define free speech?
I would say that in the United States, the legal definition of free speech is that here our free speech is unlimited unless it directly incites violence. And this is a lot more in favor of free speech than many other countries. In countries like Canada, Germany, and the UK, they have stricter rules, most of them regarding hate speech, and in which you can be prosecuted for hate speech, whereas here in the United States, that is not a criminal offense. And personally, I actually agree with that legislation. And I think that's the right thing to do.
I guess the only thing I disagree with, I was looking at the 7 words that the FCC has pretty much banned from radio, and they're words that, in my opinion, there are a lot worse things that you could say than those 7 words on air, which are mainly, like, sexual references. And so it just is interesting to me that those words are banned while other words that I feel are much more derogatory or much more offensive are left on air.
Yeah, those specific words that were mentioned in the introduction, I agree. I think that it's ridiculous that, first of all, just that those who would be banned from radio, and also that so many more offensive words, more derogatory, that would incite hate speech wouldn't be banned from the radio by the FCC.
Looking at the bill that's now awaiting a vote in the Senate, I just think it's slightly vague. I mean, I've gone over it a couple times, and I still don't understand exactly what it's doing. And because I still don't understand it, and I still, it just doesn't seem like it's outlined well enough to be able to make sure that it's not going to be overbroad and reach beyond what it's supposed to.
Yeah, I noticed that a lot of the wording and the definitions of the label, which is Violent Radicalization and Homegrown Terrorism Prevention Act, a lot of those words, like terrorism, is really difficult to define, because it's really hard to have a definition of that word that isn't biased, that's just an objective, straightforward definition. So the just the fact that that's in there, I don't really perceive that as a very strong title, like something that we really need to be protecting against, just because it's so hard to define exactly what it is and what we mean, so it can be overbroad. Also the word radicalization is in there, and that implies that that we need to protect against people who have radical thoughts that are different from ours, and that can be one more step which prohibits a lot of the free speech that we have in this country.
I just worry, I mean, you have to also, on the other hand, look at, you know, is it right that people can be targeted because of their race, that people can be targeted because of their religion? And even if, you know, like what our First Amendment protects is, if it causes an immediate breach of the peace, it's not protected. But what if it, you know, just causes a steady breach of the peace, or it's brainwashing people into thinking that, you know, all immigrants are bad, or all, you know, all this group of people are evil, and over the time, maybe no, right after you say it, they're not going to go out and kill a Jewish person, but after you've said it 20, 30 times, a week, 2 weeks later, they will then. And it's still protected by the First Amendment.
Yeah, I think that's a problem. Also, I think another problem with the bill is that it doesn't make very much of a distinction between violent actions that are being carried out or planned for and just violent thoughts. And I think that's definitely a distinction that needs to be made. I mean, there's no... excuse me, I'm sorry.
I think, like, what maybe you were getting at is that are we going to turn into 1984 where we have the thought police, where anything you think, if it, you know, you're thinking something that's illegal? Because I think if you look rationally at, you know, like the current state of the government, there's many people who think about things that would be illegal to do. But would they actually really do them? No, probably not. You know, like, they think about overthrowing the government, or they think about, you know, this, that, or the other thing. But that's not really what they're going to do. They're just thinking about it. And so we're going to end up criminalizing people's thoughts.
Yeah, there definitely, within the bill, needs to be more of a distinction between just discussing action and actually doing it. And reading through the bill, I didn't see that. And I think that that's a big issue. I also noticed reading through the bill that all members of this proposed board are to be appointed by government officials and not by popular vote, which, while that's like a common procedure within our government, I think that that can definitely lead to some problems sometime in the future.
Yeah, I guess, I mean, I worry about people being appointed instead of people being voted in, but I guess over the last couple years of watching politics, I just kind of feel like I agree with, you know, our founding fathers that sometimes things shouldn't be left to the excitable masses. I mean, I think that's a huge reason why very little gets done in our government, because either people are corrupt or people just want to be reelected. So they're only going to do things that follow the social norm and follow what is going to get them reelected. And maybe that's not always what's right.
That's true. I also think in general with free speech, sort of about societal norms, it's sometimes there can be a double standard with free speech. Like if in other countries, maybe where hate speech would be banned, if that were to happen in this country, it's difficult to ban hate speech because, as Brianna said, you know, one person's hate speech could be another's fundamental beliefs. And I think it's sort of like that would lead people to feel like the government was saying, you know, you have a right for freedom of speech, but only if you're expressing things with which we agree. And I think that's what would happen, and that's what most people would interpret it as if the government banned hate speech. I think it's a very difficult thing to do.
Do you think hate speech exists commonly today?
Definitely. I mean, there are so many different groups of people, and, you know, not everyone is the same. It's really hard to think of a time where hate speech isn't apparent and wasn't apparent. I see it in the high schools today with, you know, every group, not just African Americans, not just homosexuals, just everyone. And I mean, you can always find something to say about someone that's negative. But I think that it's really difficult to legislate things like that. Legislating social change has always been something that's really difficult for our country, and for, you know, everyone, just because those two things are quite different.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, if you look back in history, legislating social change really has never worked. And so while I think it comes down to the issue of just because you can say it, should you? And ultimately that comes down to people's own morals and saying, is it right for me to make this person, you know, feel bad about their race or feel bad about their religion? But whether or not we can legislate it, it's just so, it depends how it's said in context. Just like, you know, the seven words that the FCC has banned, depending on context, some of them, I mean, we can't say them on air to give examples, but some of them I don't find offensive. Some of them I hear in everyday life. And so I think it's so up to certain people's discretion.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of current issues involving free speech, especially in the Middle East, with the war there. There's an opposition of women wearing the veil in Middle Eastern countries. And I think that if Americans, you know, trying to force their beliefs that women shouldn't wear the veil on other countries, I think that that actually violates the fundamental principle of free expression, because it's the same thing like using a double standard and saying, you know, we don't think you should do this, so we're going to impose our ideas on you. I think that that also, violates the principles of free expression that we hold to be true in our country.
Right. I think that happens a lot. You know, like, even if you look at, like, women's rights movements, you know, like, at a certain stage, women, it was like, oh, you know, go to college and get jobs and do this. And that was what's now, like, looked fondly upon. But, like, a woman that graduates high school and is like, I want to be a wife and I want to be a mother, that's not looked, you know, like, it's not looked as fondly upon as it was in the past, because, like, in American culture, you're supposed to be independent, or in American culture, you're supposed to be supposedly liberated. But who's to say that, like, it's not what's right for that person at that time to, you know, wear their traditional headscarves or not wear them if they don't want to? But shouldn't it be their choice? It seems like, you know, we say, oh, it's your choice, so you have to make it this way.
Mm-hmm. I think that there are a few solutions to this problem with we want to have the right to freedom of speech, but we want to prevent hate crimes from occurring because of hateful speech that is made, because it is legal in this country to say those kinds of things. And I think that it's really important that the youth be educated from a very young age, because they're always exposed to other people's opinions, and they need to really be formally educated on, you know, how to decide if someone's position is supported well and whether or not you want to believe in that. And there are a lot of, I think that being educated about statistics is a really important thing. There, we read an article when we were researching for this that was called Border. It was talking about a video that was shown that was called Border. And it was basically about the Border Patrol, the Minutemen on the border that were patrolling the border. And sorry about that. There were a lot of statistics that were presented in the video that turned out to be inaccurate or not cited correctly. And I think that you know, statistics can be swayed and misinterpreted to mean whatever you want.
Yeah, I think people are just, overall, people are very gullible. And I think that's one of our really large problems in our government right now, is people will believe anything. Like, my science teacher was talking about how a person went through this community, and he went to door-to-door talking about how everyone needed to sign this petition to get rid of all the dihydrogen monoxide out of their community, because it was, oh my goodness, it came up through the pipes and da-da-da-da, and on about how awful this stuff was, and it's clear, and you can see through it, and so you don't really know if it's there. And every person in the whole community signed it. And, I mean, if you didn't know, dihydrogen monoxide is water. And so it's just how people perceive a word or perceive, you know, what they think it is. And so they're willing to sign this petition to get rid of something that ultimately they need to survive.
There's also another example of how statistics can be manipulated. I learned about this in the my philosophy class last semester, and it is proven that rapes go up in direct proportion as ice cream sales. So therefore, eating ice cream must cause potential sex offenders to rape other people. And you know, this is only because people eat more ice cream in the summer when it's hot. They tend to wear less clothes and stay out later. So that makes more potential targets for rapes. So while, those two, things do happen at the same time, you know, it's ridiculous to say that one causes the other, but statistically you can manipulate statistics in any way so that, you know, you can come up with preposterous, conclusions like that.
Right. So, I mean, I know what we talked about a couple episodes ago was the idea of teaching media literacy in our high school classes, which is basically teaching our kids common sense. You know, everything from how to tell if something, a statistic is credible, to balancing your own checkbook, to, you know, things that kids need to know to survive in this world, because it doesn't matter how smart you are. If you can eat, if you're that gullible, anyone's going to be able to con you into doing different things that maybe you didn't want to.
Yeah, I think that that's really an important part of counteracting hate speech that may be going around in America, and a way to make it void.
We're going to open the phone lines now. The phone number is 456-9991. Everyone is welcome to call, and we'd especially like to encourage the youth, their parents, and concerned friends in the listening audience. Please call in if you have any questions or insights about free speech. Do we have enough or too much? Has the world become too politically correct? Why does the FCC ban 7 sexual words but not hate speech? Do you ever say things that might offend others based on their race, religion, or sexual orientation? Have you ever felt intimidated by someone else expressing their right to free speech? Should the government move to protect its citizens by legalizing closer scrutiny of citizens who may think about protesting or redressing the government's actions? The phone number is 456-9991. We only have one phone line working today, so when you hear a caller hang up, then you should quickly call 456-9991. When you call, please be ready to turn down your radio, or we'll get a very confusing echo. The number, once again, is 456-9991. Please call and be a part of this discussion. We'd really like to hear from you. Something that reminded me of was, like, do you ever say things that even unintentionally offends other people? And, you know, like, I was talking to a woman that lives here in Willits, and she's a lesbian, and she was telling me that, like, she's a teacher at Willits High School, and when she hears kids say things even like, oh, that's so gay, even though it's, like, a common thing for kids to say, they don't realize, like, how offensive it is to her, whether they mean it to be or not, because it's, like, a constant reminder that society is not accepting who you are. And so I think that's also a huge issue is, in solving the problem, is trying to get people to be aware of what they're saying, because it's bad enough if, you know, you say something and you know it's going to hurt somebody, but it's almost even worse if you say something and you unintentionally hurt that person.
Exactly. When we're reading articles related to this topic in preparation for the show, we came across something that was organized by David Horowitz, and it was a program that came to about 100 college campuses across the United States, and it was called Islamofascism Awareness Week, and the name basically entails what the program was about. But we read in the article, it was just the fact that would be acceptable in our society, that phrasing, you know, Islamofascist, that would be like, we wouldn't say, you know, Jew-fascist awareness week. That would be, you know, something terrible. And it's just an example of how countries that we're not in agreement with, or some people have a problem with, like, it's so much easier to discriminate against them and say hurtful things about them and not even notice. But, you know, if we were to say the same thing about another group of people, I think everyone would realize how unacceptable it was to say something like that.
If you want to join this conversation, please call 456-9991. We're only on for 10 more minutes, so call now, 456-9991. I think when we were talking about freedom of speech earlier, it's really important, if we are going to limit free speech, I think a really important place to do that is somewhat in our education system. And not that people can't say what they feel, but a lot of the times I felt that teachers present things as facts, or substitutes present things as facts. And so I don't think it's right that, you know, people can come, or a teacher can come into the classroom and tell children, this is how it is, like, you know, the Republicans are always right, or the Democrats are always right, or this is bad, or that's bad. Not that it's not their opinion, but because our youth are so impressionable and so vulnerable, like, obviously, if you have an adult yelling at a student saying, no, you're wrong, this is how you should feel, the student's going to usually feel intimidated mm-hmm. and adopt their belief system. And so while I understand teachers also have their right to freedom of speech, I think it does need to be limited to them doing their job.
There are also a lot of, like, indirect effects on curtailing the right to freedom of expression that you wouldn't usually think about. There was an article written by a man whose job it was to investigate conscientious objectors. He wrote a newsletter or an article, and his point was that if people were prevented from publicly expressing their ideas, it was really difficult for him to do his job because, you know, that his job involved him investigating and seeing whether or not people had publicly expressed their distaste for the war and, you know, protested against it. And if things like that are banned, they can have an effect even on something that we wouldn't really realize.
Caller, you're on the air.
Yeah, good afternoon. Just want to tell you I'm really impressed by you guys. I'm on the road, so I have pretty bad reception. I'll make it really quick. I want to throw another variable into your discussion. And that would be that not only does government regulate free speech, but also the media does as well. And that very likely, even if the government itself isn't regulating it by making rules and restrictions, that media can come along and take care of the job for them. So I just wanted to throw that out there. You guys are doing a great job.
Thank you.
Caller.
Take care. Bye.
That is a really good point about what the media chooses to report on or what the media, you know, doesn't choose to report on.
That's true. We were having a discussion earlier about how the media portrays, you know, presidential candidates. And, you know, there are a few presidential candidates that, while in reality, you know, their track record is okay. You know, they believe in the same things that a lot of Americans would believe in, and they're good candidates and they're qualified for the position, but the media angle that would be portrayed in would cause a lot of citizens to not want to vote for them. So I definitely agree. A lot of our how we see people comes from what the media reports on them.
Yeah, I actually had a chance to meet he's an advisor for one of the San Jose supervisors, and he said that, you know, he goes in and he hangs out with the media in the media room, because that way if he needs the media to report good on an issue instead of bad, then, you know, they're his buddy, mm-hmm. kind of. Caller, you're on the air.
Hi. I wanted to bring up that the fact that Dennis Kucinich was banned from the debate by the Democratic Party. And I believe it was Iowa. They refused to let him debate. And yet he, in every way, is qualified. And in the last presidential election, the Democratic Party did the same thing to Ralph Nader. In fact, they even, he had a major fight that diverted a lot of his time and financing and energy to just getting on the ballot. In quite a few states, the Democratic Party wouldn't put him on the ballot. So to say we have free speech in this country is pretty much a joke. Well, our presidential campaigns are, not, as far as I can see, personality contests, because the real issues aren't being debated.
Yeah, that's true. I noticed that as well.
Yeah, it's absolutely pitiful, the lack of issue-oriented debate.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
Okay, well, good job. Keep it up.
Thank you.
I also sometimes feel like the main front runners for our presidential elections, I don't feel like they truly, like, represent the American people. You know, the people that are like you or me. And they always want to say, I'm just like all of you. But I never have felt like they really are. Caller, you're on the air.
Well, thank you very much. You have restored my faith in the youth of this country. Congratulations.
Thanks.
I find it very inspiring. What I want to know is, what are you learning on how to determine the truth of a situation? Of course, I always preach, you know, the four agreements, make no assumption, take nothing personal, and look beyond. But in school and in your different intellectual realms, what are the key points that you find or that you need to do to balance out the information and find the truth? Okay, I'll take my answer off the air. Good work. Congratulations. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you, caller.
I just finished my first semester at college, and I noticed that I learned a lot in my classes about especially interpreting statistics, about what you need to think about when you're hearing statistics, you know, whether or not they come from a reliable source, whether or not they're in the right context. And I think that that's really made an impression on me and helped me a lot. But I was disappointed that I didn't hear much about that in high school. And it's just been since I've gotten into college that I've really been able to talk about that and learn about it. And I think that it would be really important for that to be taught at the high school level, not just the college level.
I agree. I took a college English class, and it, I think, was probably the first time that I've been told, you know, just little things like, basic things like you don't take information off Wikipedia because it can be published by anyone, which mm-hmm. is now, I've heard is changing, but, you know, college professors have told me that and have told my sister that, who's at the University of Pacific, is that there's certain sites that you just don't take information off of, and checking people's credentials and are they qualified to, you know, even be making that statement, and what, you know, what sites are publishing it, what, you know, news coverage it's getting.
Mm-hmm. Have you noticed that you have gotten any of that information in any of your high school classes? I didn't notice it.
I don't think I have. I mean, in high school, part of what I feel like for the teachers in their defense is that it's so much of a struggle to even get a student to research anything. They're kind of like, who are we to then push them to get good research? It's enough for us to even get them to research at all.
Yeah.
So while I wish I had learned it in high school, you know, I have to give the teachers a certain amount of a break in that they're doing a really difficult job, because once you get into college, most of the people that are there want to be there. And so the teachers, it's less of a struggle every day, and they're kind of like, you don't want to do the research. You don't want to show up to class. That's fine. You're paying me good money to be here.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, there's only, especially in high school, there's only so much information that a teacher can present in a 15-minute period.
Once again, we only have 5 minutes left. Our number is 456-9991. I have a really interesting piece of statistic here. It says, Michael Savage, a radio talk show host who reaches 8 million listeners weekly, said, "When I see a woman walking around with a burqa, I see a Nazi, a hateful Nazi who would like to cut your throat and kill your children when a Muslim woman wears a burqa. She's doing it to spit in your face. She's saying, you white moron, you, I'm going to kill you if I can." Caller, you're on the air.
Hello, I'd like to just say, I just read a book that made the point that the greatest oppressor of free speech is not the government or any great conspiratorial force. It's the laws of politeness. When you take away talking about politics, if mm-hmm. you want to offend anybody, talk about religion, don't want to offend anybody, you narrow it down to, what, the weather? That's all I wanted to say. Bye-bye.
Thank you.
Thank you. But back to that quote, I mean, I guess that was the main thing, was I was thinking, wow, people can't say, you know, these really minimal words on the radio that I think are really wrong. And even if you're disagreeing with that statement that I just said, like, I don't even know if you should still be able to say it on radio, just because it's so incredibly racist. But at a certain point, I think it's society's job to not support people that are saying that and not follow, like, these preconceived notions that everyone from the Middle East is here because they want to kill the white people, or every, you know, Hispanic family are obviously illegal aliens, or, you know, they're going to rape and murder people. Or, yeah. You know, there's just so many preconceived notions that I don't feel are correct out in this world, and it's our job to, you know, deny those and say that they're wrong.
That's all for this month's edition of Youth Speaks Out. Your hosts today have been me, Janelle, and
Brianna.
Thank you to our callers. One of the purposes of this show is to involve the community in dialogue, so your call-ins are important to us. We are happy to have been able to broadcast from the Willett studio. Youth Speaks Out is grateful for support from HALT, Healthy Activities for Laytonville Teens. HALT is a project designed by Laytonville's Healthy Start program. The project is creating many alternative activities for teens in our community. For more information, please contact Healthy Start at 984-8089 or visit their website at www.laytonville.org/healthystart.html. Youth Speaks Out is produced and directed by Dan Roberts, who may be reached by mail at P.O. Box 1162, Willits, California, 95490, or through the website www.youthspeaksout.net. The hosts today, Brianna and Janelle, would also like to give a special thank you to Dan Roberts for all the work that he's put into the show. On the website www.youthspeaksout.net, you can find out more information about the project, get addresses for contacting us, get a copy of a show, and listen to many hours of previous programs in streaming audio. That is www.youthspeaksout.net. The views expressed on this program are not necessarily those of KZYX. They are the views of those who have expressed them. Our next show will be on the last Sunday of January, the 27th at 2 p.m. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you next month.